We are going to go to John chapter 8 today. And we're going to kind of continue what I was talking about last week. When it comes to receiving truth, there is really something in there that you don't hear about that often. Receiving truth is something that must be done correctly for the truth to continue its course. Because there is a course in which it follows that leads us to the knowledge of salvation. But what you do with it kind of is determined by how, I really didn't have a really good introduction to this, so I'm winging it. But it determines what course it's going to take, how you receive it or how you do not receive it. We talked about last week how a lot of people are in one ear, out the other listeners, to the point where they hear it and they say that was a really good sermon, or hey, that was really interesting. They intellectually recognize the fact that it's a true statement, if you will, that it's the truth that they heard intellectually. In their mind, they recognize that it was, that they heard it and that it was true, and that it rings truer than anything else they've ever heard. But that's where it stops. They didn't truly receive it; they merely heard it. And what they did with it was they heard it but didn't receive it and did not ponder it, and it continues out the other ear. And so last week's lesson was more about how do you receive the truth? Because what you do with it there greatly determines what you will do with it here at this next juncture. What's the next step after you've received truth? And having multiple facets of truth leads to one of two options, and that is surrendering or hardening. We're going to go ahead and read John chapter 8. We're going to read verses 28 through 32. And there's a great context to this chapter. We're just going to jump right into the middle of it here in verse number 28. It says, "Then said Jesus unto them, When ye have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall ye know that I am he, and that I do nothing of myself, but as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. And he that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him. As he spake these words, many believed on him. Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, If ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Verse 32 is something you hear multiple times when you grow up in church. It's something people baseline a lot of sermons off of. And something that I struggle with is, this is really weird to say, but when I read through the Gospels, I have a hard time teaching out of the Gospels. And that's weird to say, but when I read it, there's just so much there that I have a hard time. You have to read it slow, you know, two or three verses at a time. It's like other books, I'm a chapter reader. I like to read chapters of the Bible, one chapter a day or whatever, you know, whatever you can get in. But with these, you can't just read a whole chapter and be fine with it. You have to read just little verses a day, a verse or two or something. And that's why it makes it hard for me to study the Gospels, in that I hate going slow, if you will, in that you have to slow down and read it, find the context, look at some words, and you have to like really study it. And for me, it's easier for me to read like even the book of Acts and understand a little better than I do when I read big bits of the Gospel. It's like, wait, that has so much more to do than when you just read it. And that's with the whole Bible, but the Gospels especially. And so when I was preparing this lesson, I said that's what this means. But I didn't get that from reading the whole chapter. You have to read and like really zero in on some verses here. But what happened here is really what I want to look at today. If you read on through this chapter, you're going to see that the Pharisees said, well, you know, we're of Abraham's seed, and we were never in bondage to any man because we were born of Abraham. So they heard the very same thing that everybody else heard. They heard everything that the Jews heard, except with one vital difference. Here we read about two different receptions of this truth, of receiving the truth and the truth making you free. But you see, you have to receive the truth for the truth to make you free. And that will be building on last week's very heavily. If you read on, again, the Pharisees continue to rely on being of the seed of Abraham for their salvation. So breaking it down, there's two receptions of the truth right here in these few verses. And there's on two very different reactions to the truth. One group surrenders to what Jesus says, and the other harshly rejects it in favor of what truth they're more comfortable with. Just like we talked about last week, where the receptions is where the truth takes root, it's the same thing here. People were listening with open ears because Jesus had something to say that was radically different than any other man, but it was perfectly in line with the Gospels and the Old Testament, which they had read all their life. But the Pharisees translated it to them in a certain way. Now he translates it this way. Well, the Pharisees, of course, jump back to their reception of this makes no sense because it has no bearing on me because I am of the seed of Abraham. Whereas the Jews recognize the truth because they're listening wanting truth. The Pharisees were listening wanting to condemn him, whereas these people were listening wanting the truth. So again, the reception of it is where that starts and then moves into the next phase that these Jews also moved into. And that is the subject of surrender. When you hear the truth and you receive it, you're going to do one or two things with it just like these people did. You're going to throw it out or you're going to ponder it. And if you truly consider the truth with a mind and heart that is prepared by the truth, you have one or two options. That's surrender or rejection. And I'm going to try and be quick because we started a little late this morning, but I've got a lot to say. I'm going to try and break it down and make it make sense. But first one is surrendering to truth is not possible while clinging to the wrong foundation that you already believe in. A lot of people have one thing that they build on. Ask anybody. Usually it's all different across the spectrum. Everybody has something different that they build on. If you say, Seth, how did you become a chainsaw carver? What led you down that path? He's probably going to bring it back to one spot where he said, well, yeah, I learned I could do it and I can make a living, so it's pretty cool, so I did it. That's a harsh condensation, but it's probably what it is. But you see, the same thing happens with everybody. You know, like, what made you, and when they're looking for a career path, what made you become a preacher? Most people don't actually want the story. They just want to know how much you're paid. And that's any profession you get into. What made you become a warranty administrator? What made you become an activities director? You know, they just go through it. And a lot of people, this is what you'll find, is that they started the job and they just kind of stumbled into whatever they're doing. I was a car salesman. Didn't even know warranty administrator existed. Now here I am. So if you ask me, what made you become a warranty administrator? Well, I was sick of being a car salesman. You know what? Build on that. But all jokes aside, there was a time where they had one thing and they just started in on it and it just built on that. But everybody has that one point in their life where they build up to where they are now in life. And we encourage that in church as well. A lot of people find a time in their life, a reason that they're saved, and you know, the fact that they've always been in church, maybe their dad was a pastor, and you know, who knows? But it's taught very heavily in church when they're building the cornerstone of their quote-unquote religious life, where they have something to build on. Before I got saved, I did what everyone told me, and this is what they preach in church, is to go back in that time in your life where you did this, and that's why you're saved. Whenever you're nervous or having doubts or doubting your salvation or anything like that, that's what they told you to do. Well, go back, find that time in your life, write it down in your Bible, go back, revisit it, which they say a lot, revisit it, and that's why you're saved. If that's what you did, then you're saved. If you prayed this prayer, if you asked Jesus to do this, then you're saved. And that's really what keeps you from going any farther, because that's what you're stuck on. Because just like the Pharisees were of the seed of Abraham, well, I pray that prayer. I ask Jesus to take me to heaven. I ask Jesus to come into my heart. I'm fine. And you will never go any farther. So whether the truth that day Jesus was speaking to the Pharisees actually cut to their heart, it would not go any further because they chose to adhere to the fact that they were the seed of Abraham. And that's where it stopped. Just like you, when the truth cuts to your heart about your salvation, and you realize that, well, I did that back then. This is the time, date, place. It's right there wrote in my Bible. And you completely staunch what the truth could do in your heart. This foundation we're talking about that prevents surrender is oftentimes a foundation created through your own selfish mind and heart for nothing but, quote-unquote, eternal security. Your eternal security should not come on a time and date written in your Bible. It should not come from a prayer that you prayed so many years ago when you were 8 years old and you had a real hellfire sermon down there being preached to you. I've heard a lot of testimonies, even recently, where they heard about hell, they didn't want to go to hell, and so they said a prayer and thanked the Lord Jesus saved them. Maybe they really did get saved at that juncture, and I hope they did. But if you get saved because you're scared of hellfire, then you're probably not saved. You never get saved out of fear.
Right.
You should never get saved out of fear, because God is not the author of fear. He is not giving you a fearful mind. He has not given you the spirit of fear. So what sense does it make when we should go forward for salvation because we're scared?
No, it's faith.
It's all faith, not fear. So what other sense does it make to give our children a foundation to build off of based on that which is not of Christ? A fearful salvation.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you are basing a foundation of your faith on a cornerstone of a prayer made in fear of hell, then you may want to re-examine your foundation. Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you what, that'll probably prevent the reception of truth to lead to the surrender to the truth. The more you leave everything alone and truly examine yourself, the clearer the truth gets in your own heart. It's how you receive it. There can't be any filters or barriers on how it's received. It has to be you and God alone. Any further filtration of the knowledge of truth contaminates it and allows it to be misconstrued in our own mind, which is already grasping to stay an island to itself. The human mind, when unregenerate, continues to be an island to itself, which is why we cut out toxic people, quote-unquote, which is why we delete Facebook friends, which is why we choose to move on from friend to friend when they choose not to agree with us. When the island of your mind has nothing but itself to build off of, the happier yourself will be, in theory. You have to relinquish full control to Christ in order for this to work. You can't hold on to what your preacher said or what your mama or daddy said. You can't hold on to a life verse that you've lived out. You have to let go of everything and let God's truth work itself in your mind and your heart. Because your biggest obstacle will be whatever you think you know about God.
Yeah, that's right. That's the truth.
The mind, when left to itself, will learn so much about one thing. And when you find it's almost like an information dump your mind goes looking for to protect itself, because you are working so hard to deny the fact that you are at fault here, that you rather know so much about God than actually know God himself. You have to let go of that foundation, because surrender is not about building up, it's about breaking down of yourself. Which is the second point. It's more than just a reprogramming of your brain, as most people like to put it in church. It's a total tearing down and resetting of yourself, because it's now the baseline of how you're going to live your life forever. And if you're not willing to do that, then you're not willing to do anything. The reception of the truth comes in much like a jackhammer or a harsh explosive and rattles the very foundations and beginnings of your thinking. Because it's not only what you're doing anymore, it's what you've been doing and what you must do for the rest of your life. It is not the start of something, it is the complete renewal of everything.
Yes.
What we've lost is that we're so individualized that we're afraid to actually break from the crowd and do something different. Our individuality comes from the mob mentality that we live by nowadays. That's why there are trends that live on for a short amount of time, but everybody does them. These quizzes that go across Facebook that are the bane of all of our existences, everyone decides to take them. When one person takes them, the next person takes them. Well, do you see a bear or an eagle? Do you see a horse or a caterpillar? You know, because that determines what kind of person you are. And because we're so desperate to find what our identity is, we'll take these quizzes and live out whatever this quiz says that we are, because somebody needs to be right about who we are. Our individuality has now turned into something that can be manipulated. That's the word. By something so simple as an algorithm that gives you the same answer 5 times and a different answer the 6th time. We're back to compatibility tests. Guys, don't do it. The only compatibility test you need to know is you're equally yoked together. What holds people back more often than not is that it's not possible, it's not popular, and it's not feasible under the world's philosophy. They don't understand a way that's not anything like what they have, which is why it must be received and processed in their mind. And this is why this new gospel doesn't work, because it's a soft gospel. It has nothing to do with what goes on in your soul. It's a pure head knowledge, which is why anybody can do it. The gospel, in and of itself, is simple. But we've overcomplicated it and made it oversimplified, if that makes any sense at all. We've oversimplified it to the fact that it's complicated, and now everybody can do it, but it's not really done. And where you've overcomplicated it is that you oversimplified it to where everybody can do it, and now it's not exclusive, so nobody wants to be in on it. So they've now shot themselves in the foot. So now even their simplified gospel, very few people want something to do with because it's not an exclusive club of people. Worldly gospels do not work. Because worldly gospels are based on the fact that people want to be a part of something. And that they want to be a part of something that somebody else cannot be a part of. That's that human culture that continues beating themselves in the brain right there. And because we've taken that, who has the real gospel? It's the only book that we refuse to print, we refuse to buy, and we refuse to continue printing. That's the King James Bible.
Yep.
Without any solid, radical truth, it'll never stick in their minds and break down the worldly foundations that operate their minds. Like I said before, this is a harsh explosive and not a soft repaint job of their old house. This is something that will penetrate the very fiber of their being in order for it to work in any of our lives. You can be a perfect church-going Christian and still need this in your life. And because everything you've learned and the way you viewed it and the way you filtered it into your heart was a lie because of your own human reasoning, it needs to unlearn more than you need to learn. We need to quit viewing this as some psychological chess game and view it, as we've heard before, as a spiritual chess game. A lot of preachers today, when I listen to them on the radio, everything is very psychological. Everything they bring up is just like that one preacher in Malden reading this psychological book instead of a Bible when he was teaching this terrible, terrible sermon. But that's all across the nation. They have a Bible verse that is what they call a springboard text, and they use science to back it up. And instead of using the Bible, instead of using the Bible to prove any science they may have, they use science to prove the Bible that they have.
Yeah.
They teach out of philosophies, and they teach out of, you know, that's how they teach people to go soul win. Is different word tracks and how to lead people and how to guide people's minds and get this answer, how to cut people off, how to manipulate their minds, which is exactly what the devil does when he's trying to lead you astray. That's what they teach you to do when you're trying to lead them to Christ, quote unquote.
Yeah.
There is nothing holy about that.
No, sir.
You cannot be that way. That's a double-minded man. You cannot manipulate other people's minds in hopes to get them to Christ, because all you're really trying to do is get them to be a number on your soul-winning record. I can't even do that. The biggest piece of misinformation that the devil can use on us is to convince the church that, one, someone is unreachable. Because there is a point in that psychological soul-winning handbook where you need to quit dealing with somebody because the devil has taken them beyond a certain point. And they actually tell you that this person is unreachable. And so you just leave them alone. Just like the... help me out here. Who comes knocking on the doors all the time?
Jehovah's
Witness. When they shake the dirt off their feet because you're not going to be convinced.
They did that to me one day.
Oh, I believe that. But it's the same way with these soul winners, that they can't. You just have to go away. The only thing you can do is pray for them. And even that probably won't help them. I had a soul winner teacher tell me that one time. And then lie number two is that there is some great argument we can use on their psyche to win them over. Surrender is of the body, mind, soul, and spirit. And if you play that backwards, you have the correct order of operations for how surrender goes. Starts in the spirit and the soul, and then you give over your mind and your body. Because if you have to let the truth, you have to surrender to it, let it run its process to completely and totally eradicate everything out of your soul, to relearn what Christ truly is about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because salvation is so radical, that's probably why we're never going to see a revival in this day, because we are totally against everything radical. Whenever you've probably heard it before, and I hear it about every week, when they say, well, what do you think about this? Even on simple matters, don't even have to be spiritual matters. They're just like, what do you think about this matter of business? And I'll tell them what I think, what we should do. They say, well, that's really radical, because it's an absolute. That's all it is. It's just an absolute. You know, we're not going to set circumstances, again, where this is okay and this is not. And then people listen to your preaching, I'm sure they call you radical all the time, because it's an absolute. It's not a, you know, if it's over here, this is what you should do. But if they do this, this is what you should do. That's called a psychology class. Because I had a general manager that used to do that to me all the time. Tell me what they said. Okay, we'll go out and say this. But if they respond this way, or if they use this body language, say this instead. Because, again, you're leading, you're guiding, you're finding what they're feeling so you can manipulate them further to what you need them to do.
Yep.
If anything is an absolute and not a, well, you know, we can bend it if we need to, then you are a radical person. Even the Muslims are very radical, but they believe what they say and they never deviate. And we've taken that definition of blowing ourselves to smithereens because we believe so hard and applied it to absolutely everything. If you decide that that's what you're believing, you're not moving. People watch certain Christians because they certainly believe that since you disagree with them, you might do something violent. When that's totally untrue. If you disagree with me, then I know you're wrong. I mean, it's fine. You know, back in the day, my father used to argue with people, and he said, well, we'll just agree to disagree. He said, I won't do that because then we both be wrong. And, you know, that's something I adhere to because it's right. If you have the truth, and if the Bible said it, and they're disagreeing with the Bible, then if I were to agree to disagree, then we both be wrong, and that's not right. You should never be willing to compromise what you think is right, what you know is right from the Bible, for somebody who's just being a little cantankerous.
Mm-hmm.
And I say all that to say this, is that salvation has an essential part, which is called surrender. Truth, when it is received correctly and processed correctly, and has the correct process, is run correctly. If you surrender to the truth, that's the only way you're going to get to salvation.
That's right.
Because if you do not surrender to the truth, or if you choose to find a way to make this truth work for you, it will never work. You cannot allow selfish mindsets to keep you from being saved.
Yeah.
The truth is a harsh wake-up call that you cannot do this through your own will. It is a terrible, terrible truth to the sinner in that you cannot any longer allow yourself to find reasons for yourself, because the truth is laid out very plainly, extremely plainly, so that you can't argue with it, so you cannot reason with it. It is what it is. And until you surrender to the fact that it is right, no matter what you say, you will never get to the point of surrendering to the truth, to Christ, to salvation. In church, you talk about surrendering in a sense of going to the mission field, surrendering to preach, surrendering to run a certain ministry in the church, and the list goes on and on. But surrender, as it was taught when I was growing up in church, is almost an exclusive word, and I wrote this down because I'm going to say it wrong, is an exclusive word for the work of God without any thought as to surrendering your entire life to Christ. Now follow that. We idolize people and write entire books about people who miraculously gave it all to God, quote unquote, and had a great influence in a revival movement. Why do we do that? Furthermore, why do we hand out these books so much and push their names so hard when preaching sermons? We focus on the person instead of what they did. And I did this a lot because they handed out so many books on Charles Finney and Mr. Hudson. And there's just, I mean, everybody. And I've read books better than that. You know, Mr. Patton, I read that book. That's a big book, but it's so good. But you can't focus on that person. Don't focus on the name. Look at what he did. The story often starts with them surrendering everything to God and defining their lives according to the Bible. They started their life with God by surrendering their lives to God, not to a mission.
Right.
Nowadays, they surrender to preach, and they surrender to go to a mission field, and they surrender to do this, or they surrender to something and not God. And that's the greatest burden, and why so many preachers are being caught in scandals and so many missionaries are just collecting money and living great down there. It's because they surrender to something and not to God, because they feel like that's what they should do, because their daddy's a preacher, their daddy's a missionary. They've been going to church all their life. This is what they do. This is what they were taught at church camp. They were taught to not to surrender their life to God, but surrender their life to some mission. It's just like when you see those spy movies and their whole life is wrapped up in being a spy and everything. So that's just what they do. But at the end of the movie, they realize that it's absolutely empty and they've absolutely done nothing with their lives. We treat Christianity the same way. We give them we give our kids some great mission to go live and be in this world and, you know, be surrendered to this mission. This is what you're supposed to do. But instead, they don't have anything. And at the end of their life, or at the middle of their life, or at the beginning of their life, they realize they have nothing. If this is all that Christianity has to offer, then forget that. And they abandon the quote-unquote mission that the church gives them. They started with surrendering their lives to God. They surrendered to God, and then God used their lives because He could, because they were surrendering to Him. But He can't use a heart that's not totally and completely surrendered to Him. That's where we get totally backwards. The truth comes first. You receive the truth. You must surrender to the truth that Jesus is Lord. And He is Lord of your life. And that unless you surrender to that, and Jesus is Lord of your life, and bar none, this is what you're doing, that's when God can guide your life. You don't pray and ask for direction and then surrender. It's not like Wheel of Fortune where you spin the wheel and if it lands on something you like, then you surrender to that. That's not what this is. When the truth comes into your life, that's when the choice must happen. Are you going to surrender to the truth, or are you going to reject it for your own truth? A truth that fits better for you. What have you done with the truth?